Indeed, the secret of much of that complacence which recommended him to his fellows was the thought of this unknown retreat, whither, in the evening, he could betake himself and indulge undisturbed in his own studies and reveries. These studies, besides those subjects necessary to his course at the university, embraced some less commonly known and approved, for in a secret drawer lay the works of Albertus Magnus and Cornelius Agrippa, along with others less read and more abstruse. As yet, however, he had followed these researches only from curiosity, and had turned them to no practical purpose. His lodging consisted of one large low-ceilinged room, singularly bare of furniture. For besides a couple of wooden chairs, a couch, which served for dreaming on, both by day and night, and a great press of black oak, there was very little in the room that could be called furniture. But curious instruments were heaped in the corners, and in one stood a skeleton, half leaning against the wall, half supported by a string about its neck. One of its hands, all of fingers, rested on the heavy pommel of a great sword that stood beside it. Various weapons were scattered about over the floor. The walls were utterly bare of adornment, for the few strange things, such as a large dried bat with wings dispread, the skin of a porcupine, and a stuffed sea-mouse, could hardly be reckoned as such. But although his fancy delighted in vagaries like these, he indulged his imagination with far different fare. His mind had never yet been filled with an absorbing passion. But it lay, like a still twilight, open to any wind, whether the low breath that wafts but odors, or the storm that bows the great trees till they strain and creak. He saw everything as through a rose-colored glass. When he looked from his window on the street below, not a maiden passed, but she moved as in a story, and drew his thoughts after her till she disappeared in the vista. When he walked in the streets, he always felt as if reading a tale, into which he sought to weave every face of interest that went by, and every sweet voice swept his soul as with the wing of a passing angel. He was, in fact, a poet without words, the more absorbed and endangered that the springing waters were dammed back into his soul, where, finding no utterance, they grew and swelled and undermined. He used to lie on his hard couch and read a tale or a poem till the book dropped from his hand. But he dreamed on, he knew not whether awake or asleep, until the opposite roof grew upon his sense and turned golden in the sunrise. Then he arose too, and the impulses of vigorous youth kept him ever active, either in study or in sport, until again the close of the day left him free, and the world of night, which had lain drowned in the cataract of the day, rose up in his soul, with all its stars and dim-seen phantom shapes. But this could hardly last long. Some one form must sooner or later step within the charmed circle, enter the house of life, and compel the bewildered magician to kneel and worship. One afternoon, towards dusk, he was wandering dreamily in one of the principal streets, when a fellow student roused him by a slap on the shoulder and asked him to accompany him into a little back alley to look at some old armor which he had taken a fancy to possess. Cosmo was considered an authority in every matter pertaining to arms, ancient or modern. In the use of weapons, none of the students could come near him, and his practical acquaintance with some had principally contributed to establish his authority in reference to all. He accompanied him willingly. They entered a narrow alley, and thence a dirty little court, where a low arched door admitted them into a heterogeneous assemblage of everything musty and dusty and old that could well be imagined. His verdict on the armor was satisfactory, and his companion at once concluded the purchase. As they were leaving the place, Cosmo's eye was attracted by an old mirror of an elliptical shape, which leaned against the wall, covered with dust. Around it was some curious carving, which he could see but very indistinctly by the glimmering light.